Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Rick Recking, a member of the program committee, longtime member of the society. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. That's an aspiration. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter your age, or your abilities or inabilities. We have opening words. They'll be read by Al Nettleton.
Wake up! Let us wake up. Let us wake up, not just from the Sunday morning exhaustion, from the wish for a few more drowsy minutes in bed. Let us wake up to this world we live in, to its beauty and wonder, and also its tragedy and pain. We must wake up to this reality that not all in our world have what we do, however much or little that is. We must wake up to the idea of our wholeness, our lives, not only as complete as the lives of those around us, of those who are inextricably tied to a great web of mutuality of which all of us are a part. We must stay woke, in the words of our friends and colleagues involved in Black Lives Matter, working every day for racial justice in our country. Let us wake up. Let us stay awake. Let us stay woke. And now in this time and place, let us worship together.
Our chalice lighting this morning will be by Bill Parmenter and Penny Eiler.
We light this chalice in memory of the courage of those who have struggled for freedom, the persistence of those who struggle for justice, and the love of those who built beloved communities to carry on the light of hope. Paul Sprecher.
Martin Luther King Day is my favorite holiday because I lived in a time with this man who walked the earth, and I was walking with him in many regards. So I always look forward to the celebration of Martin Luther King's birth. And our celebrations of his life. We're lucky today to have a member of the community, Tasumba Welch, who's here to speak about Dr. King and about his journey as an African-American man. Tasumba is a UW Odyssey graduate from 2013. He's currently a student at Madison College and will be transferring soon to the University of Wisconsin. He's the owner of his own business, Welch's Going Green Landscape, and he speaks at different Martin Luther King events around Madison. I'll be surprised to hear what he says and happy to hear him. Welcome. Tasumba Welch.
I'm very happy to be here today. Thank you all for having me out. Pam and Gary, they're everywhere I go. If I didn't know any better, I thought I had a secret fan base. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I woke up this morning, I was going back and forth in discussion and disagreement with the nachos and cheese I ate before I went to sleep last night. That didn't hash out too well because I was hurting for a while. And then I had to stop at the gas station and get a cup of coffee, and I ended up talking to the guy who had on the t-shirt that said, "Slavery got things done." So that was a really interesting conversation. I had to end that one quite fast. Yeah. So my morning's been quite pleasant. And then I come in here to these amazing people here who's just ready for whatever, you know? These are the people who should be on the front line of whatever discussions and disagreements we have in a community like us. We just put us on the front line, we'll take care of it, right? A lot of you all that know me are probably looking at this like, I've seen him before, he didn't have any of this. Well, I'm working with the Madison Guild Theater, right now. We're doing a play at the Bartell Theater. It's going to start March 3rd. It's called The Whipping Man. I'm playing a former slave. His name is Simon. I want you all to come out. The director name is Dana Pelaban. A lot of you all probably are familiar with who she is. Gigi is another person from the Madison Guild Theater everyone knows. So come out. This is a play that's set in 1865, the year that slavery was abolished. Abraham Lincoln also was killed, assassinated during this period. I'm a former slave who realized that I am not a slave anymore. So please come out to see how that's going to work, because what I'm looking to do now that I'm not a slave, I'm going to take my wife and my daughter and we're going to leave. But I didn't know that they sold my wife and daughter before slavery was abolished. So please come out and check out this play. It's a three-act play. Three gentlemen will be playing it. I'm one of the gentlemen that is playing in this part. So please come out and support at the Madison Guild Theater, Bartell Theater, March 3rd. It's going to play from the 3rd through the 13th. So please come out. I'm very busy doing that as I start my 17-credit semester next week as well. I am the head of a very large household. A lot of you all may know my partner. Her name is Sagacious Levenstein. She's on the cover of the Bravo magazine right now, Infamous Mother's founder, if any of you all pay attention to the Bravo magazine. Yes, I do own a landscape company here in Madison. I'm going into my fourth year. I've been certified by the state of Wisconsin and the city of Madison this year after doing everything on my own underground for 3 years. Now I know what those underground rappers are like now when they be in their basements and they rap, they finally make a CD and now I see, so. I got better. I didn't have any business. I got these gigantic flyers to pass out to you all today. I think I'll pass these out later, but I do want to make sure that you all get them. I did not have cards and I looked through my book bag and I found that. I'm usually with Emily Arbach. A lot of the times, I'm a Odyssey graduate, like I said before, 2013, and I'm like the ambassador for Odyssey almost. I go around and I speak and I do a lot of different things. I tell my Odyssey story. Do I have time for my Odyssey story? So my Odyssey story was like this. So I grew up in a different kind of setting. I grew up in Chicago. My family history and background includes all the things that we were through colonization was taken away from us. Family dysfunction, educational barriers, generational poverty, incest, rape, the things that carry out, that forms up. We all know that these things have side effects, I should say, right? However, I came here to Madison in 1997. I came here in Madison and I came here with, I was not who I am now. Okay, I came up here with that Burger King mentality. I was gonna come up here with my Chicago ways. I was gonna have it my way. I was gonna come up here and be a Madison brute, right? So after I got my butt kicked, I got thrown in jail and things didn't work out so well for me. I ended up on 10 years of parole. I did six and a half years sporadically throughout that time, in and out of incarceration, trying to find my way. At that time, because of these things, I am the father, I'm 37 years old, I am the father of 12 children, biologically. I have nine grandchildren. I know these numbers are not adding up to you all, but I want you all to know that rape and incest has side effects. So these are the things that I carried out. So it led to a road of destruction and gang banging, selling drugs, going to prison. I moved here to Madison to where I found this beautiful program called Odyssey. So I was in prison the last time, and I realized that my children were out here going through that same generational chain, right? That same generational chain that I had grew up under. And I was in prison the last time getting ready to get out. I had 3 weeks left, and I said, if I don't get out and do what's right, my children are going to die, and I'm responsible for them. No matter what I've been through, I got to find a way to fix it. So I got out. This UW Odyssey program embraced me. I started changing my life when I read about Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass, and when I learned about slavery, it changed my life. All I wanted to do was get education. Now I'm chasing a PhD, right? I'm at the front door of it, but I'm chasing it. People say, you say you're gonna get a PhD like it's nothing. I'm like, I'm hoping it's not gonna be. Now I just watched my partner go through this. I'm already writing my dissertation, you know? I don't even have an associate's. I'm already writing my dissertation. So I am a prime example of rehabilitation, felony rehabilitation, okay? I'm a prime example of adversities coming to successful stories after adversity, right? So I'm trying to become the success story because I figure if I got rich and gave my children $1 million, most of them are probably overdose on drugs. They're probably part of themselves to death. People be looking for them to rob them. They probably wouldn't make it too far if I just gave them $1 million. But out of all the things that I've been through, if I end up getting a master's and a doctorate, right? If I'm a business owner, right? If I start to study and teach family, and bring family in a close knit and try to break those educational barriers, that family dysfunction, that generational poverty, right? That's the greatest gift I can give them, to give them the example. So I take away excuses. They could never say, oh, because of this, I couldn't do this. Because I'm the prime example that through all adversity, there was success, right? So when I graduated from this program, I realized that education is the most powerful weapon in this whole entire world, right? Especially as an African-American male with 3 strikes on his back, right? I have 3 felonies. Like, how am I going to make it through this? So I started meeting all these interesting people at the UW, and I started speaking for them. Then I started working and doing the landscape. 85% of my clientele, UW professors, Madison College professors, all throughout Madison, right? So the best clients you can have, I tell you. And I love doing the work. I'm passionate about the landscape. I got a Bruce Company history. I was there. I was at the Bruce Company for 4 years. I left the Bruce Company with the idea that, first of all, I have too many kids to work for anybody. I got to try to fix this. So my partner, she had 5 kids when I met her. So together we have 17 children once we marry, okay? She is also from the south side of Chicago, and she also has she has the girl version of my story, right? She just finished her PhD at the UW-Madison, right? After the background that I have, she just finished a PhD, a single mother, 5 children, 3 different dads, right? Here in Madison. Now that's what we're talking about, right? That's what we look for. That's that adversity to success story, right? Now I'm a little bit behind her in education, but I had the life skills that she didn't have because people looking at us like, how do you all even match? She got a PhD, da da da. You're just now getting into Madison College. I was like, I look at them and I say, look, she had the educational piece. I had the life skills piece. We make a perfect couple. We're doing absolutely amazing. Our children are absolutely amazing. So that's probably me in a nutshell. I think that's what they say, in a nutshell. So I'm going to move on into the King program. And once I pass out my flyers, you can always reach out to me. What happened when I first told my story, and I talked about my 9-year-old incident with my in-home sibling, right? Female sibling, I talked about this. So what happened was a 57-year-old man came out the crowd and he hunted me down at the end of the program. And he said, I'm 57 years old, I've been in Madison my whole entire life. My uncle was doing this to me from this time to this time, and I've never talked about it a day of my life, but Tsumba, today, I wanna tell you my story. And as of that moment, I realized that my story was gonna change lives. So I wanted to tell my story. I wanted to tell my story from where it started, then I wanted to tell from where I felt I was getting success and becoming successful, right? So that was another part of my drive. Martin Luther King, I love Martin Luther King ever since I was a kid. He was someone who I always looked at as a very powerful leader. Frederick Douglass is another one who helped change my life through the story of him and Mr. Covey, just that scene of him fighting and why he had to fight with Mr. Covey, trying to get educated. And he was willing to die to get educated because he knew that that was the freedom that he was gonna need to succeed, right? I won't go into this year's election, but what I will do, I will speak through King's words, what he fought for just for us to have the opportunity to vote, right? And Dr. King delivered this keynote address in front of the Lincoln Memorial during a prayer pilgrimage for freedom on March 17th, May 1957, the 3rd anniversary of the Supreme Court's famous school desegregation decision. And I'm just gonna read an excerpt from this, okay? But even more,
All types of conniving methods are still being used to prevent Negroes from becoming registered voters. The denial of this sacred right is a tragic betrayal of the highest mandates of our democratic traditions and its democracy turned upside down. So long as I do not firmly and irrevocably possess the right to vote, I do not possess myself. I cannot make up my mind, it is already made up for me. I cannot live as a democratic citizen, observing the laws as I have helped to enact. I can only submit to the edit of others. So our most urgent request to the President of the United States and every member of Congress is to give us the right to vote. Give us the ballot and we will no longer have to worry the federal government about our basic rights. Give us the ballot and we will no longer plead to the federal government for passage of anti-lynching law. We will, by the power of our right on the law and the statutes of the Book of the Southern States, bring an end to this dastardly acts of hooded perpetrators of violence. Give us the ballot and we will transform the salient misdeeds of bloodthirsty mobs into the calculated good deeds of orderly citizens. Give us the ballot and we will fill our legislative halls with men of goodwill and send to the sacred halls of Congress men who will not sign a Southern manifesto because of their own devotion to the manifestos of justice. Give us the ballot, and we will place judges on the branches of the South who will do justly and love mercy. And we will place at the head of our Southern states governors who have felt not only the tinge of human, but the glow of the divine. Give us the ballot, and we will quietly and non-violently, without rancor or bitterness, implement the Supreme Court's decision of May 17, 1954. In this junction of our nation's history, there is an urgent need for dedicated and courageous leadership. If we are to solve the problems ahead and make the racial justice a reality, the leadership must be fourfold. Thank you. Wow, that one always takes me to a place. It's hard to shake out of that one.
Yeah.
I'm coming back, y'all. I'm coming back. Just yesterday, I found out that Martin Luther King was interviewed by Playboy magazine. I had no idea how that was going to go. But I did some research, and it actually is pretty interesting. It's a pretty interesting question asked. So he was interviewed by one of the people from Playboy magazine, and the question that was proposed was, Dr. King, are your children old enough to be aware of the issue at stake in the civil rights movement and of your role in it? And King replied, yes, they are, especially my oldest child, Yolanda. 2 years ago, I remember I returned home after serving one of my terms in the Albany, Georgia jail, and she asked me, Daddy, why do you always have to go to jail so much? I told her that I was involved in a struggle to make conditions better for the colored people, and thus for all people. I explained that because things are as they are, someone has to take the stand, that it is necessary for someone to go to jail because many Southern officials seek to maintain the barriers that have historically been erected to exclude colored people. I tried to make her understand that someone had to do this to make the world better for all children. She was only 6 at that time, but she was already aware of segregation because of an experience that we had. Playboy asked, would you mind telling us about it? Not at all, King replied. The family often used to ride with me to the Atlanta airport, and on our way, we would always pass Funtown, a sort of miniature Disneyland with mechanical rides and that sort of thing. Yolanda would inevitably say, I want to go to Funtown. And I would always evade a direct reply. I really didn't know how to explain to her why she couldn't go. Then one day at home, she ran downstairs exclaiming that a TV commercial was urging people to come to Funtown. Then my wife and I had to sit down with her between us and try to explain it.
I have won some applause as a speaker, but my tongue twisted and my speech stammered, seeking to explain to my six-year-old daughter why the public invitation on television did not include her and others like her. One of the most painful experiences I've ever faced was to see her tears when I told her that Funtown was closed to colored children. For I realized that at that moment, the first dark cloud of inferiority had floated into a lumental sky. That at that moment, her personality had begun to warp with that first unconscious bitterness towards white people. It was the first time that prejudice based upon skin color had ever explained to her, had ever been explained to her. But it was part of paramount importance to me that she not grow up bitter. So I told her that although many white people were against her going to Funtown, there were many others who did not want colored children to go. It helped somewhat. Pleasantly, word came to me later that Funtown had quietly desegregated. So I took Yolanda. A number of white persons there asked, "Aren't you Dr. King? Isn't this your daughter?" I said we were. And she heard them say how glad they were to see us there. Everything I'm reading is an excerpt. King didn't write nothing short. It was nothing. It was nothing short-winded about him. He didn't care too much for periods and commas. He was absolutely amazing. I have another reading I want to share with you. It's a small portion of what he wrote from the Birmingham jail to the seven clergymen. Dr. King wrote this famous essay on the 16th of April, 1963, while in jail. He was serving a sentence for participating in a civil rights demonstration in Birmingham, Alabama. He rarely took time to defend himself against opponents. But eight prominent liberal Alabama clergymen, all white, published an open letter earlier in January that called on King to allow the battle for integration to continue in the local and federal courts and warned that King's nonviolent resistance would have the effect of inciting civil disturbances. Dr. King wanted Christian ministers to see that the meaning of Christian discipleship was at the heart of African American struggle for freedom, justice, and equality. He started this out saying, "My dear fellow clergymen, we know through painful experience that the freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. Frankly, I have never yet engaged in direct action movement that was well-timed according to timeable for those who have not suffered unduly from the disease of segregation. For years now, I've heard the words wait. It rings in every ear of every Negro with a piercing familiarity. This wait has almost meant and always will mean never. It has been a tranquilizing thalidomide, relieving the emotional stress for a moment, only yet to give birth to an ill-formed infant of frustration. We must come to see with the distinguished jurist of yesterday that justice too long delayed is justice denied. We have waited for more than 340 years for our constitutional and God-given rights. The nations of Asia and Africa are moving with jet-like speed toward the goal of political independence, and we still creep at the horse and buggy pace towards gaining a cup of coffee at the lunch counter. I guess it is easy for those who have never felt the stinging darts of segregation to say, wait. But when you have seen vicious mob lynch your mothers and fathers at will and drown your sisters and brothers at whim, when you have seen hate-filled policemen kiss, Kirk, brutalize, and even kill your black brothers and sisters with impunity, when you see the vast majority of your 20 million Negro brothers smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society, when you suddenly find your tongue twisted and your speech stammering as you seek to explain to your six-year-old daughter why she can't go to the public amusement park that has just been advertised on television, and see the tears welling up in her eyes when she is told that Funtown is closed to colored children, and seeing the depressing clouds of inferiority begin to form her little mental sky, and see her begin to distort little personality but by unconsciously developing a bitterness towards white people. When you have to concoct an answer for a five-year-old son asking in agonizing pathos, "Daddy, why do white people treat colored people so mean?" When you take a cross-country drive and find it necessary to sleep night after night in the uncomfortableness of the corners of an automobile that you sleep in because no motel will accept you. When you are humiliated day in and day out by nagging signs reading white and colored. When your first name becomes nigger and your middle name becomes colored. When your first name becomes nigger and your middle name becomes boy. And your last name becomes John. And when your wife and mother never get to respect the title Mrs. or Mrs. When you are harried by day and hunted by night by the fact that you are a Negro, living constantly at tiptoe stands, never quite knowing what to expect next. And plagued with inner fears and out of knowing what to expect next. Resentments, when you are forever fighting and degenerating sense of nobodiness. That word always catch me, nobodiness. Then you will understand why we find it difficult to wait. There comes a time when a cup of endurance runs over. And men are no longer willing to be plunged into an abyss of injustice where they experience the blackness of corroding despair. I hope, sirs, you can understand our legitimate and unavoidable impatience. That's just an excerpt. That's just a small portion. Yeah, he almost did that whole thing without one period and one comma. I still don't understand how he... My mom and dad were married 42 years, and that was very uncommon in my age for African-American marriages. They both came from the South. My dad, Grenada, Mississippi. My mom, Birmingham, Alabama. I don't know how they met. That don't even make sense to me. It never did. But I know they met, and they were married 42 years. I started doing this Martin Luther King speech. I was in fifth grade. My dad passed away in 2007. My mom died in 2012. They both died never hearing me speak this speech. It just wasn't, I never remember seeing them in the audience when I was at school. I never remember them because they were programmed. And that's how they survived. My dad raised the whole entire family. He never learned to read and write. He left home when he was 13 years old because his mom and dad were fighting. He said he didn't want to kill his dad for fighting his mom. So he left when he was 13. He ran away from home. He went to New York and started working at a steel mill. My dad ended up owning a bar, two buildings, and a host of other small businesses. He was absolutely amazing. I didn't know my dad could read until I was almost 30 before he died. He was absolutely amazing. And he became even more amazing to me when I seen that. I'm like, I knew he wasn't human. From that one time when I sassed him and he reached around that corner and found a way to pop me on my butt when I knew he was invisible. They're both going now, and every time it's a few things I wish my dad would have witnessed, like the Cubs winning the World Series, Obama, I wish he could have experienced that, and gas prices, he would have flipped out about that. Seeing gas under $2, that would have just, I don't know how to do the Dore Mi Do thingy. Yeah. So bear with me, my voice has been. So I say to you, my friends, even though we must face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted inside the American dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Let freedom ring when we allow freedom to ring. When we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city. We will speed up that day when all God's children, white men, black men, Jews, Gentiles, Protestants, and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in that old Negro spiritual. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty. Thank God Almighty. We are free at last. Thank you.
Mr. Welch has asked that the questions deal more with his own life as opposed to specifics about the history of King or anything like that.
As we all know, slavery was a business, okay? Slavery was a business, just like if any one of us owned a business. We have to maintain the things and keep well on the upkeep on the things that keep a business ran well. If I was selling pigs, and if I was selling pork, and if I was a good, and if I was a good pig and pork seller, if a pig got sick, I probably wouldn't cut it and sell it. I'd probably have it put down and destroyed, right? So lynching was a part of maintenance upkeep for slaves. It had a lot to do with disciplines. And just keep in mind that you inherited your slave master's religion because the Bible ruled you as a slave. They used the Bible to rule. So I hope that kind of answers that. Well, after I shook myself out of my own asinine decisions and mistakes growing up, I had to find a way. What drove me, I'm going to use the example of me being a student. I'm going into my third year as a student at Madison College. And I'm not a good student. And I'm not a good student because I'm not smart. I'm not a good student because I'm not structured like a good student. I don't have the study habits of a good student. But I hold a 3.8 GPA, and I make the dean's list because I'm driven to succeed. So being driven by something and just having something to do, It brings a different type of order to your life. It brings a different type of purpose. So with me having all the kids that I had at the age of 14, I had my first child. I had a kid probably every other year after that until I was 21. Because I never talked about my molestation from my sister. And the effects were I started having sex at the age of 10. So it's a generational chain. I never talked to anyone about it until I was 33 years old, and it was in front of 400 people, and it was 400 strangers I told my story to for the first time ever, and it changed my life. That, the incarcerations, knowing that my daughters, while I was incarcerated, knowing that my daughters were out being raped and beaten themselves while I was incarcerated and I couldn't help them, and I'm sure I was the one that was being called on as these attacks went on. So I got out and I knew I had to change my life because I was responsible for theirs. So far as me, that is one of the biggest things that changed my life. I'm a product of what I'm a product of, right? And I had to take that and find a way to use it productively. And I think that's what happened in the process of this. So in the process of everything, I realized that I was going to be able to help others. I was going to be able to get the help that I was afraid to ask for. And it was like the real deal gang banging. It wasn't just like I was throwing up there, I'm this, I'm that. I was like really in the midst of all the things that's almost going on in Chicago now. And what happened was, because it all happened, this is what I just realized at the age of 37 years, and I realized how much damage this had to cause. I didn't realize how much damage my history had to play into my adult life, right? I didn't understand mental health. Mental health culturally is not something that's heavily colored in African American community. You know, I have a son who they was writing all these behavior things on for the last 5 grades, and we took him out of school eventually. But they didn't realize they was looking at these as behavior issues. When he'd actually come up to read in front of the class, he would show out. He would show out, he'd throw papers, he'd run out the class and make the teacher chase him. And they couldn't figure it out, he was dyslexic. And he knew that every time he'd come up, he was gonna embarrass himself. But guess what they were doing instead of trying to figure out what his mental health was? They was writing him down as a behavior problem. Mm-hmm. Pencil to prison pipeline.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So by the time he's 16, he was gonna have a behavior record that was gonna send him straight to prison, his first time actually doing anything, right? All because that the mental health issue. And these schools, there are some amazing schools here in Madison, but they're not trained. They're trained, but they're not trained to look for mental health issues. And we've been talking about this, to bring more training into the schools. Because if these teachers can identify some of these issues with these children and not deem them off to be behavior problems, right? We can help a lot. That pencil to prison pipeline thing is very, very serious. And if you look at the numbers of recidivism today, it shows, right? So yes, I hope I... You know, I think because I had so much bottled in that I wasn't able to talk about, because I tried to talk about my situation with one uncle and I was threatened and scared so bad that I decided I would never tell anyone else. And you were right, I was the baby of the family. I was spoiled to death by my dad. You know, if I was sitting on the front porch and I seen a bike, if I looked at it hard enough, he would go get it. It was the other components of what I couldn't talk about with them that pushed me out to a crowd to where I wasn't comfortable talking to them either, but I felt comfortable in that crowd. I felt in the midst of something, oh, now I got, yeah, try me now. Or, you know, whatever fear was brought on me from my incident as a kid, I felt like I had some protection. You know, and that's what happened with most people who join gangs, even here in Madison. And I've never seen, this is the worst gang banging I've ever seen in my life here in Madison. But I've seen it to where these kids come from amazing homes and they just look for someone to protect them, you know, from just being called the simplest thing as a wimp or being pushed or bullying or some things like that. So you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's easy to veer off into the streets when you have things covert inside of you that you're running from and that you can't display where you love. So you have to find somewhere to display these acts of, you know, pain and suffering and, you know, go-to. You need go-to people. Everybody need a go-to person, right? I'm sure we all got one.
Thank you very much. Our president, in his final speech to the American people, noted as an aside that the demographics of the country will continue to change, and the colored people of all colored people will before long be the majority in this country. And we whites need to recognize that, you know, that this is our reality, is to join with them in being this broad diversity of color. So thank you for your work in fairness and equality.
And he's trying to figure out a way. I know she'll be coming back probably soon with you all or similar events, I know. But in 2018, I looked to turn my landscape company as a vessel for men and women coming out of prison straight into employment.
Oh, great.
It's called transitional employment. And I want you all to know that memos will be given out, because I'm going to need support as I go to the city to ask for their help and participation and funding for this program that I'm trying to start.
Good idea.
The closing words are by Odette Fulbright Folsom, written in memory of Eric Garner. Do not think we are finished. Oh no, we will never be finished, never just done, until the light of justice is lit behind every eye. Do not think we will be silent. No, there will not be silence until the world has sung the names of the dead with full throats, and still we will sing on. Do not think fear is the end of us. Oh, you are broken in mind and heart if you even imagine that our fear for our lives is the end of this story. We are braver than you have ever conceived, and you will not be the end of us. We have come to take back the world that is the inheritance of better children, better lovers, better days. There will be love again, but justice is our demand now. You will not take us down. We are endless, firelit, determined, and we are coming for you.
Stay for a lunch that we're having, and guests and visitors are welcome to stay as well. We sure hope you do. With that, greet your neighbor and see you next week.